Welcome everyone to What the Force, and welcome to a new episode of Clone Wars Special Report. I'm Marie Claire Gould, and with me, as always, for all of these episodes is Kyle Gould.
Isolation! Our intrepid host fears for his life in the out-of-doors. Hiding in the confines of his home, he hopes to make it through. But how long will this last?
Yes, this is... Well, we always record together in our own home. Nothing really has changed in the last couple of weeks except for more Clone Wars.
More Clone Wars, indeed.
More Clone Wars. So this was Season 7, Episode 6, Deal No Deal. And we enter the episode, continuing on with our Martez sisters and Ahsoka. And the opening fortune cookie slash lesson of the episode is... Mistakes are valuable lessons, often learned too late.
So, Marie Claire, what's a learned too little too late thing for you in life?
Learned too little too... Oh, this is like out of nowhere.
It's exactly what the quote is all about, though.
Yeah, no, let me think.
So while you're thinking about it, for most people, I did a big read on this. It is figuring out... that you, if you do what you love, that it takes more work and more commitment than to just do what's easy. That most people, it takes our everyday habits form our future selves is one of the biggest ones.
Oh.
And then number three on a list completely unrelated to Star Wars at all, it is that fear is the root of anger. And then... they quoted Yoda as their proof of concept in this list.
Where is this list from?
One of those internet things.
Oh. You know,
what are eight valuable lessons that many people learned too little too late?
Wow.
Yep.
That's so interesting.
So I was like, moisturize?
Girl, wash your face?
Just moisturize. Use that moisturizer. It's so relevant, even especially when you're young.
Wear sunscreen.
Yeah, wear sunscreen. It's the same. Yeah. Wear moisturizing sunscreen.
Wear moisturizing sunscreen.
For me, it was using the little words more often than the big words.
Oh, yeah. That's a pretty good lesson. For me, I think the lesson that I learned super late in life, but like has gotten me through so much in the last how many years? 9 years is the idea that the biggest thing standing in my way is usually my own
self.
What?
Self?
Well, no. It's usually my own brain that's stopping me from doing things. So like telling me I can't do something or I shouldn't do something, and mainly to do with just trying hard. I had a massive fear of failure many, 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 many years ago. And so I wouldn't even try. And as soon as I was like, you know, that part of my brain, you can just stay quiet. I'm going to ignore you. I don't know. Maybe it was like, it was probably some sort of level of fear of failure or something like that. But as soon as I learned how to stop listening to that part of my brain, I did much better in life and in, you know, kind of getting what I want out of life and following my bliss. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, you do use a lot of big words. I think you should use all the big words on this podcast.
I will hope to.
Okay. So, general thoughts and feelings about this episode. What did you think?
What the hell, Trace? What the flying hell?
It's literally the worst decision.
They predicated that the whole way through. They showed you this is how she thinks. This is how she reacts.
Yeah.
So this is how she's going to think something through and then react. And you should not be surprised by the crazy silliness of her decision making later on. Because over the last 22 minutes, we've shown you what she's going to do.
Yeah. 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 I'm still in shock. Like I knew it was coming, but it was like also like it was still shocking when it happened in your like the oh no moment.
Oh my god, all that red sand just into hyperspace.
So I do actually want to talk about the origin of spice.
Okay, cool.
A little tiny bit. So spice is the main drug, illicit material that is, you know, referenced in the Star Wars universe as something that people desire, right? So we have the spice mines of Kessel, which is like one of the main locations that you can actually go and find, buy, get spice. What's interesting is that this concept was directly brought in from Frank Herbert's like Dune, the idea that this spice, this illicit material, has the ability to enhance or act as a drug. In the Star Wars universe, it is most closely, I would say...
You want to buy some death sticks?
What I was going to say was it's most closely related to our, you know, current version of opium or what we use it for. So opium being turned into drugs, opioids that are either harmful or helping... depending on the situation. To me, that is what spice is in the Star Wars universe. We start out and we find out that Rafa had been trying to get together a crew to go and do this run for the first time. We have an establishment of Trace and Ahsoka basically understanding the importance of Trace's ship to her. I want to talk a little bit about the like ships in the Star Wars universe. Kyle, what did you think of like Trace's desire to have a ship?
It was a good desire.
Like, to me, ships are often a stand-in for the like symbolic freedom that, you know, like adventure, they can be your home, it's your way out, your meal ticket. It's, you know, and in Star Wars, they're often used as like, you know, I want to fly away from here. It's that call to adventure often in Star Wars.
Yeah, we haven't seen it as direct in this case.
Yeah.
The only other person we ever see that with is Han.
Yeah, with the Falcon. Yeah.
And then we get the exact same comments from Han that we get from Trace.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. It's the fastest thing.
Yeah, it's the fastest ship. I'm the best pilot. You know, it's going to take me away from here. And it is a common thing that we see like in the books and other places, people train to be pilots without necessarily ever flying out of the atmosphere. We know Rey has done that. It's a common story that is retold over and over and over again in Star Wars. The idea that people are pilots and they, once they escape the atmosphere, they have the freedom to go on their adventures. Yeah. And then Rafa has been reluctant to use her sister for this opportunity.
Yeah, it seemed strange.
Yeah. She either didn't trust her or didn't believe in her abilities or... you know, maybe didn't want to get her involved. It could be a variety of things.
Yeah, we're never given any motivation as to why Rafa did not ask her to begin with, and then now suddenly is asking her.
But we did get a confirmation that the laundromat is literally the front for her illicit businesses.
Yes.
And I was like, yay, confirmation! It's not actually a laundromat, just a...
But it is.
I mean, yeah, but not a very good one. No. And then they head off, they make this decision, Ahsoka decides to come with them and help, and they head off to Kessel. Were you surprised to see Kessel in Clone Wars?
No, I was surprised to see a planetary body with more than one geographical type.
Like what?
Topographical changes.
Binomes?
What? Did you know that Kessel was originally supposed to be a potato-shaped planet?
Really?
Yeah, in all the concept art, it's listed in the very first spec written piece from George as Kissel, and then got changed to Kessel, and it always been viewed as like this luxury pleasure planet sort of thing, and it was a potato-shaped thing for the longest time.
I really appreciated how we had both this like mind side of the planet and this very lush, like, and the style of the buildings on the lush side actually reminded me a lot of Lord of the Rings and like the elven Lothlorien like elves, and like Dave Filoni being like a huge Lord of the Rings fan. I was like, Dave, did you do the drawings of this? I wouldn't be surprised to find out like that's the case. And then we have these kind of overlords on this ruling side of the planet, in contrast to this almost dead side of the planet that is enslaved. And it reminded me a lot of the difference between what we see in Lord of the Rings with the trees and the Suramon, you know, tower, the White Tower, and then eventually the pits where he makes the Uruk-hai. So it kind of reminded me of that contrast and how minds themselves are a symbol of greed and darkness in the galaxy. And the fact that they were using slaves shows that even though the light side looked like it was the pretty and naturist side looked like it was nice, it was all brought on the backs of slavery. This was an anti-capitalist commentary in and of itself. What did you think of Kessel after? It's no longer potato shaped, though. It was definitely not the Kessel we saw in Solo.
Yeah, and nothing. It's really, if you want to compare things to Solo, I mean, all we saw was the mining facility.
Yeah.
In Solo, we didn't see the other side of the planet, the opulent side,
Which could still exist, but we just didn't see it.
Exactly. But then, like, so I have a question. I'm not a Solo fanatic. I've only seen it like twice. So I had always thought that they were taking unrefined spice from the facility to where they needed to get it refined. And it was like,
it was coaxium. Super
crazy. Oh, okay. So it wasn't spicy.
No, they had a vault of unrefined coaxium that they had dug up there.
Oh, which they probably refine on site and then use in their mining. For
yeah,
spice
exactly.
Too.
And okay. They just like, it was unrefined coaxium. They don't really explain like why a spice mine had coaxium, but it like Kessel is known for spice. Because that's where they send the Wookiees to die.
Yep. No, exactly.
It's a scary place, this mine.
In Solo, it was. Not yep. so much. We get such a kid's view.
But, I mean, like, there's slavery, right? There's robots on the outside and literal organics doing the work on the inside.
Didn't even seem like there were robot, like, droids.
There was one establishing shot of the mine where there was, like, droid guards on the outside.
Yeah, to keep all of the slaves in the pit doing their duty.
Yeah.
Weird. In a world with droids, do we really need organic slaves?
Well, I mean, literally, that's what Trace said. She's like, I wonder how many droids are down there. And Ahsoka's like, those aren't droids.
Right.
So I wonder if it's something like Zerka Corporation that's like, you know, that's like uses like actual like humans or organic slaves and droids. Like,
no, I agree.
It's interesting. So they pick up the spice and they're supposed to deliver it to the Pikes. I mean, it seems simple. Ahsoka, of course, has a problem with this whole concept, everything. They don't get to meet the king. The king of
why
of
would
Kessel.
You? That makes no sense. There would be no reason to get to meet the king.
No, I know they're sad though.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I just
and they meet the major domo.
That's just the indicator of their inexperience, right? That's showing us. Oh yeah, these people don't know what they're doing at all.
And Trace mentions my ship is the best. My ship is the fastest.
And the major domo's expression when she says that is just prime. It's just delightful.
It's like, oh god, I'm dealing with absolute amateurs. Great.
Yeah.
So they pick up the spice. They head on their way. They leave the Kessel Run.
Yep.
Safely. They're not picked off, like they kind of foreshadowed a little bit because they were like, oh, you know, the bigger transports are always picked off. So we're a different kind of transport.
Oh, yeah. Well, we know that they're not going to get picked off because they're going to be stupid of their own right.
Yeah. So in the midst of hyperspace travel, they have a fight about the ethics and morality of delivering spice to the Pikes.
And while they're having a fight, Rafa and Ahsoka, about morality, Ahsoka tells Rafa that this crime syndicate, these gangsters, they'll just take whatever they want. They mm-hmm. could take the spice. They could take your ship. They could take anything they want out of this. We should not be dealing with them. We're going to lose. And Trace loses it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
She just loses it when she thinks they might take her ship. And then she's like, they're going to take my ship. They're going to take my ship. They're my ship. They're going to take my ship. And she doesn't even listen to the rest of the debate.
Yeah.
She's too busy trying to figure out how to make sure that no one takes her ship.
Yeah. And she puts the two and two together, which is the spice is the problem.
This is really important, too, because this is true to life.
Yeah.
You'll be having a conversation, a debate with someone. You'll say one thing and it's just a snippet, just an addendum to the point you're trying to make at large, but it's all that person hears. They don't hear anything else.
Yeah.
So while we think, well, this is crazy, this is poor writing, this is crazy. No, this is legitimate. She has a major phobia, a major issue. She probably needs counseling about it.
No, I think that she's just tied a lot of who she wants to be to the ship.
Yes.
Like her and the ship are like a package deal in her mind, right? And she doesn't have anything. Like even she doesn't even really have her sister in her own mind, I think. Her ship is the only thing that she can rely on.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's to the point of
she couldn't even hear past that
to herself.
Oh no, definitely.
And others.
Yeah.
Which is why she probably needs some counseling.
Feel like Trace's reaction is very genuine, but it feels like a young teenager reaction, like a very extreme, like, you know, you say like, and you don't do this and the cops will take your car and impound it, and suddenly like screech, throwing stuff out the window, and then suddenly like
the cops are gonna, I'm gonna drive my car off a cliff.
Yeah,
serves them right. They're not gonna impound my car. It's like, no, I was just trying to tell you can't park here.
Yeah.
Like,
it was a very extreme reaction.
Yes.
Yeah. So they didn't dump the crates, just they had the ability to dump the product in the crates.
They opened the thing and opened the doors of the crates.
Yeah.
Sure. Technology.
Technology.
Whew. So wonderful. That way they can pretend. Or maybe those were different crates. I don't know. I never really paid too close attention to what the exterior of the crates looked like. I was too busy watching valuable red space dust float away.
Yeah, which it does look a lot like Dune spice.
Yeah, sand, for sure.
Yeah, like the spice of Dune.
This is worm poop, for sure. Wow. There's so many things going on here. Because also it gives, structurally and story-wise, an opportunity for Rafa and Ahsoka to be on the same side.
Yeah.
Literally saying the exact same lines.
Yep. Yep. And I liked that we got to see Rafa without her jacket and with her jacket on this episode. So cosplayers can be like, ah, this is what's underneath her jacket. Yeah. They arrive at the planet and they land and they're like, what's the plan?
Well, first I wanted to comment one last thing about that whole entire scene. Because Ahsoka's approaching it from the way that she was raised. We don't really look at Ahsoka here at all, other than what is this weird and wild thing that Trace is doing? Where does it come from? Where is it rooted? But Ahsoka, her viewpoint is like, we need to have this ethical debate. This is important.
We need to talk about the pros and cons of this and what could happen and what should happen.
The ramifications of what is going to happen if we deliver these goods to these bad people. They will do bad things.
And she literally takes it to the extreme of the conversation. Like, so she basically says, like, if we do this, they're going to take everything. Like, it's a very it's not necessarily grounded in reality. It's kind of driven by fear of what could happen.
Yeah, I didn't feel like Ahsoka was ever driven by fear. I feel like she was like, we need to engage in this philosophical debate to determine whether or not what we're doing is right and accurate, because she has been raised by Jedi who
literally have to do that all the time.
she only has ever argued with well-schooled, trained Jedi.
Yes.
And now she's talking to two 1313 normies.
Yeah.
And so it's no small wonder that Rafa doesn't understand what perspective she's coming from at all and why this is even happening.
Yeah.
Because, you know, getting money is the end result to a better life. Doesn't matter how you get there. And for Trace, there are repercussions to what we could possibly do. I don't want any of those repercussions to hurt me.
Yeah.
And Ahsoka doesn't realize that the way she's arguing is creating hardship for both of the people she's arguing with, because of the way she's doing it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's a good lesson in communication, like having a genuine fight on the ship.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I hadn't thought out what we were going to do, but don't worry, I've thought it out now and I know what we're going to do. And they're like, okay. And then of course, good storytelling is don't tell us the plan, show us the plan. So she tells them the plan, I guess, on the rest of the flight over. And they're all like, this is a terrible plan. There's no way this plan is going to work. This isn't even a plan. This is a dumb plan with bad repercussions. And she's like, it's going to work. And they're like, but we're non-force users and don't really understand anything from the perspective of the Jedi. And you didn't tell us that part.
And they don't know that she's a Jedi still. And so she uses a mind trick when they arrive there.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I guess it's morally okay if you're scamming Pikes to save your own life.
So we arrive on the planet. Unknown planet. Who cares? Because it's just, we're just meeting at a dock. It doesn't really matter what the planet is, except it's the Pikes planet.
Oh, yeah. So I just wanted to quickly have a conversation about Anakin and Yularen and the leaving the planet.
Oh, my God. I choked up as soon as I saw it on the thing. Not Yularen, because whatever, that guy's a douchebag. And you can totally see how he ends up leading in the Empire later.
Yeah.
Why is Yularen standing there questioning random ships that fly by? Doesn't he have more important things to do?
I wanted to just kind of talk about this, because it's actually like a really good frame for part of Ahsoka's journey, which is
absolutely
there's kind of two symbolic things that are happening from a hero's journey perspective that I really do want to talk about. One of the things is when you leave into space, it is the big part of the journey. It's the threshold to the underworld, because literally anything can happen once you leave into space. And
it's so funny. We go from the underworld
to
the underworld.
To the underworld, yeah. Like underworld in the sense of the unconscious, or this is the transformational part of the journey. And Ahsoka's threshold guardian is often considered to be the person that she identifies as a parental figure, because threshold guardians are often parents or older siblings or people that are trying to prevent you from going your way. And literally she runs into Anakin. He senses her. She senses him. They have this like mutual understanding. He knows she's leaving the planet. This ties back to a couple of points within the saga. This ties to the point in Rebels when Vader senses her, knows she's on that ship, the apprentice lives situation. And it also kind of ties back to Return of the Jedi when they are flying towards Endor and Vader walks up to the commander of that ship and he senses Luke inside of that ship. And that commander's like, I was just about to clear them. Instead, Yularen's like, I wasn't about to clear them. I was about to blow them out of the sky. And Anakin's like, just let them go. So like all of these situations, like Anakin
You, Laren, would never have blown them out of the sky, because then it would have been a ton of paperwork.
It's called data work in Star Wars. but it's very similar situations where Anakin is standing there, like, and senses somebody important in the other ship.
Yep.
And this happens to him a lot.
You would think that the entire scene of them leaving the 1313 and flying off into space was meant to show us that leave-taking between Anakin and Ahsoka,
mm-hmm.
and his making the threshold portal open for her to leave.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there would have been trauma and trouble, right? And he's there to say, no, and stop the guards at the town's gates from closing them at night so she can slip out into adventure and beyond and go save the day.
Where we saw a similar version of this in Star Wars, which you can see in Star Wars, is when they leave on the ship in A New Hope, and in Mandalorian, when the Mandalorians fight their way out of the town in episode 3, and you see the, you know, heavy gunner Mandalorian, like, give the fly next to the ship with his little jetpack and, like, give the little, like, salute. That's the same sort of experience. It's like, now you're on your way. Now you're going on your adventure. Yeah.
But this scene actually serves two purposes.
Okay.
Because it actually serves as our first linchpin moment where, because Trace says, stop telling me what to do.
Mm.
Not once. Twice in that scene, and that is what causes them to get into trouble.
Yeah,
and it is only Ahsoka's relationship that gets them out of it. Trace doesn't take anyone's advice or suggestions unless they come rooted from her own perspective very well at all.
Yeah,
she'll fight Rafa to the death to protect Ahsoka because Ahsoka's her newfound friend, even though she has no real reason to trust or like or want to need Ahsoka. Mm-hmm. She's just chosen to do so, and come hell or high water, this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also what this scene is for, is to show us Trace is problematic.
She's young. She's a baby.
She's super young, because they're in hyperspace, and then there's whispering that happens between the two sisters about the plan. Like, I'll tell you in whisper talk, but not tell Ahsoka. I was so frustrated on Ahsoka's behalf. I'm like, what is this elementary? This is junior high school? What? Like,
yeah, it was weird.
Simon likes who now? And then they're shaking and shuddering, and it's like the ship's all falling apart because they're in hyperspace and it's never really been tested. And she's like, oh, I hadn't turned off the air brakes. What the heck are air brakes? Like, landing gear gets raised up? Like,
I mean, it's just like when you're driving the car for the first time on your own, you forgot to take off the e-brake.
Probably. I mean, that's how it felt, and I know that's how it was supposed intended. To come across.
Yeah.
It was adorable.
Oh, it was adorable, yeah.
But what the heck are air brakes?
We have questions. There are things that, like, it just literally exists, and we will never know, like, why in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to the Pike's platform. They have this, you know, tete-a-tete. The Pikes mean business. I really love their design. You know, all of the different looks, like the ones with the little, like, you know, they had the tubes for breathing, and they looked very much like the Solo Pikes. And then we also had the kind of more regal, and you could tell he was in charge because he was the tallest Pike. Hey, my theory stands. You're in charge if you're the tallest, which means Chewbacca's in charge of everything.
So I think that was Marg Krim.
Okay.
I think. And that was done by Steven Stanton.
Mm.
And then there were a couple of other characters in here. The Overseer.
Yeah. So In the Spice Mine.
In the Spice Mines. And then there's Fife. Who's Fife?
He was the Major Domo, I think.
No, the Major Domo is Kinash Locke. And that was done by Corey Burton.
Okay.
He is the Major Domo of King Yoruba. Corey Burton, you may know what other voices he's done.
I feel...
Here in Clone Wars.
I feel like I do know him.
Yes, he's voiced two major characters in Clone Wars.
Did he do our boy Cad Bane?
You are correct.
Yeah.
And who else?
Oh, like a bad guy?
Oh, yes. That limits it considerably.
Bad guys.
Exactly.
Dooku?
That is right as well.
Yeah.
Ladies, like, folks, she cannot see my computer screen, nor am I feeding her anything. I only wrote down two of the several voices he did. I would never have been able to tell you that Kinash Lock, as played by Corey Burton, is also Count Dooku and Cad Bane, just, and she didn't even know that he did both of those voices.
I didn't know that. No, I knew he was a voice actor in Clone Wars, but I didn't know he did those voices. But I was thinking about the timbre of his voice, and both Cad Bane and I think Cad Bane goes through some processing, but I think both Cad Bane and Dooku have very similar timbre. I have a superpower.
Look, this is why you have a podcast on Star Wars. It's just a thing.
No, but
here's your credential right here.
But I have a superpower, which is I'm very good at guessing people's voice acting voices.
Or you've just seen this episode so many times and you're very well acquainted too with
voices.
Voices. So
So
there you go.
What do I win?
A podcast.
I already had one of those.
No, it's how you got it in the first. Okay. So yeah, now we've got our crazy gorgeous pikes. Like yeah. I want to play a pike now in a game.
They seem so cool.
Like, they're so cool. And the fact that the whole race are gangsters.
Yeah, like the whole race.
Well,
now we have to see some good pikes.
Yeah, now that we've seen pikes, that's the thing. They've always been like seen and heard and not seen.
We saw them in a couple of previous Clone Wars episodes.
Oh, we had? Oh,
yeah, okay. Just kind of as part of the underworld stuff. I think that Maul might have threatened one or two in the past. But again, we saw them in Solo as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It was delightful. And then no one notices Ahsoka's mind trick. Like, I thought for sure that Trace might turn and see, like, why are you mouthing things strangely? But
why are you saying that out loud? And then he's saying that exact same thing.
But it's also like nobody notices when the Jedi do these weird mind tricks.
Yeah.
So, other than other Jedi.
Well, it also kind of shows, like, if a Jedi is not dressed in robes and carrying around lightsabers, like, they could blend in with society pretty well and like use their skills to their own advantage.
Absolutely.
Right? People don't know. I don't know. It just makes me think about like how hard it would be to actually find a hidden Jedi.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're never going to know where they are.
Yeah.
Because nobody who knew where they were knows that because they took that out of their they wiped it.
Yeah.
So.
And so like, it makes sense why there was Inquisitors.
Yes.
You know, post the war and why Vader was so big into finding Jedi and killing them. Because really, like, it takes Force users to find them because then they're not able to be manipulated by them either.
Well, they'll be able to see the manipulation in others sort of thing.
Oh, and tell, like, why did I go that way? Oh, you idiot. You know,
still,
yeah.
I really liked number one's reaction to his, you can take the credits and leave now. And he's like, this is highly irregular.
This is not according to our code of acquisition.
I mean, some business. This is highly irregular.
It's very Ferengi. Like, yeah.
Well,
this is not according to the code 534 in the code of acquisition.
This is, yes, they are business gangsters. They are not crime gangsters.
No. I mean, they seem kind of weak and flimsy. So.
Don't they?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean.
Business, business, business. I mean, maybe they're really good at refining things. Like, maybe that's their thing.
They're all good at process flow.
No, they're... I meant to say, like, they're like the Breaking Bad version of gangsters, where they,
yeah,
like,
maybe, hey.
They, like, make the drugs.
They're the Heisengard?
Heisenberg.
Yeah. You've never even seen it.
I've never seen Breaking Bad. I apologize. I've seen multiple episodes of Better Call Saul while I was doing other stuff while Kyle was watching it.
Definitely need to see Breaking Bad. So, this is highly irregular, says the guy.
And he's like,
and then he's like oh. I just love how he's like, oh, you didn't give me the code? We must have sent that to you in the transaction email, which they don't say email because it's Star Wars. It's like, and then he just shoots it open with his little taser thing.
Yeah.
They still think they're gonna get away.
Yeah. It's really bad. It's like effectively like so many bad choices. Like Ahsoka can think through the moral conundrum of giving the spice over to the Pikes, but then like this plan is like, it's not a good plan.
This is a Qui-Gon Jinn plan.
It's a it is totally a Qui-Gon.
Feel, don't think, use your instincts.
This is totally a Qui-Gon Jinn plan. It'll be fine.
Until somebody says, engage the tractor beam, and then you know you're screwed, because that's like, there has never been a time in Star Wars where they say engage the tractor beam that it doesn't mean horror and terrible things for our heroes.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. And they leave us off on a cliffhanger, of course.
Oh my God. Except for the line of, between the three of us, there's plenty of blame to go around. It's like, no, there isn't. This is all on Trace.
Yes, this is. I mean, maybe they just feel bad about having the argument that confused her in the first place.
So what are other things that Trace could have done at all?
Jumped out of hyperspace.
Physically jumped out of
No, like.
Just left from the ship.
Hey, I have seen people fights that way.
Yes.
Ooh. No, but like, you know, pulled the e-brake, actually, the air brake, and like popped themselves out of hyperspace, had the fight.
Yep.
Resolved it.
Yeah. Or not even had the fight, just dropped them out of hyperspace and then said,
I guess we're going back to
Kessel. We're dropping this stuff off.
We're bringing it back.
Oh, I kind of wanted to see that episode now. Could you imagine the Majordomo's like, you've been gone for 6 hours. What? You're back already? Yeah, we've decided.
We're not morally able to do this.
There's some moral conundrum here.
We did a trolley thought experiment with this.
I put out a Facebook poll or a Twitter poll, and it said,
HoloNet.
Yeah. And it said, deliver the spice to Kessel. It said, take the spice back. And it said, dump the spice off the ship while in hyperspace. And we really just decided to bring it back.
We just didn't want to be involved in this.
Major Dome was like, ah, yes. Twitter rules.
Yep. The poll rules. Shrug.
So yeah, listeners, what would you have done? Would you have dumped the spice? Would you have gone back to Kessel? Would you have delivered it to the thugs?
Or delivered it to the theoretical medical facility, that Ahsoka had in mind.
For unrefined spice.
I mean, it's kind of like the equivalent of people right now being like, I'll deliver these drugs that we don't know if they work or not.
It's so cool. So there's some interesting things happening in the background of this episode. Would you like to...
Yes, talk about I would.
That. Okay, cool.
Yes.
So King Yoruba.
Yeah.
And the Yoruba family, right? That the Majordomo represents.
Are they all Twi'leks?
I don't think so. They mean Twi'leks generally work as the Majordomos to
other important especially people. Like underworld people. Yeah.
I mean, he's no Bib Fortuna, but so the Yoruba family was not in the in the habit of working with gangsters, right? Like they had this valuable commodity. They were selling it and exporting it and whatnot. Totally fine. The problem is they live, their planet, Kessel system, is way too close to the Pikes system. So they're really, really close. And the Pikes, seeing the underworld, the syndicate effects and quality of spice, start putting pressure on the Yoruba royal family. And this is all in Legends in the books.
Really?
You go on Wikipedia and you can read all about all of this stuff in the
background. So you think this is actually like they're pulling this stuff in, maybe?
It's all direct. King Yoruba and the Pikes are all part of that Legends element that they're just tying in quietly in the background to this. Because like it's just extraneous stuff for us to enjoy while Ahsoka is going on her adventure. But if you've read these books and you know this history, this takes on huge contextual ramifications for what they're doing by showing us the affluent side of Kessel by showing us the Pike's homeworld. And really, they weren't that far away. It was like one argument and dumped spice later, they were already there.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was a very short period of time. And we know in Solo that Crimson Dawn and the Pikes have a working arrangement and they can't go directly against each other. So do you think that by the end of this, we're going to see Maul?
I would think that we're leading to that.
Yeah, I think it's all going to be connected to the end of the season because, like, maybe there's going to be a time jump where Ahsoka's, like, trying to go after Maul, but I think she's going to discover that Maul is still out there.
Yeah, I just thought that was really cool that they made reference to the Yoruba family, Kessel, and the Pikes, and all of that is contextual to...
Yeah, and it could be stories stuff that they bring back, right? And
absolutely
make important, but they have that already worked in. So let's talk about, is there anything behind the scenes that you wanted to talk about or production wise?
Yeah, just one other thing about the meeting on the planet where they go and have dinner with the major domo. It was like, you don't know these people at all, and you're giving them only three containers of spice to be delivered. And yet there's this huge banquet.
Yeah, it was weird.
That was so strange. Why is there a huge banquet?
They have a tradition of hospitality.
Yeah, let's hope, right?
It's like, we must feed you food. They're actually Italian grandmothers.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you're here, we gotta feed you. You look too skinny.
The major domo just likes to, you know, swirl his martini and drink it while looking condescending down at people. It was just, I just was like, there's a banquet now? Why is there a banquet? And then also at the very top of the show, they're talking about all the things she learned, all the things Ahsoka learned topside.
Right.
Right. And how she went to school and whatnot. And they're like, where did you go to school? And she's like, I went to Skywalker Academy.
Oh,
and I
was like,
oh, man, I really want to go to Skywalker Academy. No, I don't want to go to Skywalker Academy. That's not going to go well.
I can't breathe.
Yeah, they made it sound like it was a really good place to go to school, didn't it? No, it's not, people. It's really not.
Don't go to Skywalker Academy.
No.
Oh, I can't breathe. Okay, so, yeah.
And then, in the same scene, to bring it back, Trace says there are no academies in 1313. It's unaffordable. And then she's like... And we're like, oh, and then we hear and we find out that her parents split.
Split. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
So I hope that comes up because that was a major revelation. Also, because it's Star Warsy and your parents are gone. They're not gonna be around.
Pre-dead, we called it.
Exactly.
They're pre-dead. So I mean, split, they left them, maybe?
Yeah.
They divorced?
I think split as in left.
Yeah.
As in like they buggered off. They realized they were in over their heads. Something was wrong. They booked it.
They left and assumed the kids would be fine on their own.
And that way Rafa had to raise Trace to the best of Rafa's abilities. And we've seen tons of those sorts of shows and those sorts of stories. But
Skywalker Academy.
The Silver Angel. There are 27 ships in the world that are registered as the Silver Angel. The top of the list is a yacht that is registered to the Isle of Man, just so you know.
Random trivia.
Yeah.
I thought the Silver Angel was an excellent name.
Isn't it?
I thought
it was delightful.
I thought it was very Star Warsian as well because of like the quote about the angels being the most beautiful creatures in the galaxy from The Phantom Menace and kind of like... I don't know. It felt nice. I liked it.
I quite liked it.
Yeah.
And of course, we learn about angels from Anakin. And Anakin gives the Jaipur snippet to Padme.
Yep.
Right? Super important luck charm of the universe. You'll be lucky and blessed from here on out until you give it to somebody else and then all your luck will go away. A la Darths and droids. To take that back.
Yeah, that's not real in the Star Wars universe because
Darths and droids. I just love that imagery in that. Anyway, but that led me to looking more thoroughly. When they talked about the angel, I looked at Rafa and Trace's two necklaces. They both wear two necklaces.
Yeah.
And they're like chunky amulet things.
Yeah.
What's up with those? Do you know anything about
those?
No,
I don't know anything. I thought they were really cool.
They are so cool. They seem to be relevant and important. But then again, all of their characters and all of their animation are just so full of detail yeah. now, with multiple rings on fingers. Their hair is super unique and flowy. Mm-hmm. Like, they have so much bandwidth and so much computing power now that they can add all of these things
yeah.
in. But just the way their necklaces bounce when they move around and whatnot was just
it's delightful.
So cool. And I really want to know what the relevancy of those two necklaces is.
Just to comment on Yularen. Yularen looks high definition old. Like, he looks like he's had like a bad month, but he's standing next to Anakin Skywalker, so he obviously has.
I don't like him. I used to like him. I don't like him anymore.
You don't like him anymore? He's getting more angry with time. Anything
production? He's become so much more inflexible.
Anything production-wise that you want to bring up?
Sure. So this episode was written by Dave Filoni and Charles Murray.
Yes.
So I don't know. Did Dave write the last
one? It was Charles Murray and Dave Filoni last time.
This time it's the other way around.
Yeah.
It was directed by Nathaniel Villanueva and Stuart Lee.
Okay.
This is Stuart Lee's 58th Star Wars episode.
Wow.
He previously did A Distant Echo, which we just recently talked about.
Yep.
So I think he is a stable director that just works in his cycle. Every month, he's got another episode to direct. Next month, it'll be yours. I think that's what's we're going to see, is that Stuart Lee will be consistently doing one episode every month or so.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also get Nathaniel Villanueva. It is his first directorial gig.
Wow.
And I want to say, you did some really good work here, Nathaniel, especially in those opening scenes where you seamlessly moved from the interior of the garage.
Yeah.
They walk through and then they approach the ship, then they enter the ship, and then we're about to leave.
Yeah.
And all of that was just beautifully rendered and beautifully done. And I realized you can only get away with this in animation. There is zero way you could do these big backdrop scenes in the garage, entering the ship as you turn the whole entire scene over to go to the ship. And then you walk into the ship and you're in the ship. There's just no way you could have done all of that.
Was it all in one too?
No, it's not all in one, because they're showing character moments.
Right.
Also, they can cut wherever they want because they don't have to worry about camera placement in real life.
Yeah, they can be inside walls.
And stuff. It takes an animator to thinking like that. Like, I realize that animation direction and animation production is so different from real animation, or like real production and visual 3D, like in live.
Because they don't have they don't have the same limitations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, they have zero limitations. They can put the camera wherever they want because it's wherever they're drawing the picture from.
I do want to talk just briefly about one thing that is really interesting, is that with The Mandalorian, so...
Yeah. Isn't that... I know. I thought about the exact same thing.
What?
That it's all virtual behind them.
Yeah. They can control, like, hey, this shot is in the sunset, so they can do like 8 hours of sunset shooting.
Exactly.
And also, Din Djarin's character is played by two stuntmen most of the time. And Pedro Pascal is the voice of him and is only in the armor occasionally.
Yep.
So it's like, it's very animation driven from a production perspective.
Absolutely.
It's just, it's fascinating. Like, literally, like, the puppet is a puppet. The puppet is more like an animated puppet, because animation is more like puppetry, like playing with dolls, than it is like, and then you do the voiceover work and the voices to that. So you think about the Mandalorian, Din Djarin, actually more being, he is more like a puppet or an animated doll than an actual character. It's really interesting to think about.
So you think about Clone Wars, you think about Mandalorian, and then you look back to A New Hope,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, wow, it gives me so much more. respect and admiration for what they went through and the hardship of filming New Hope.
Yeah.
Versus like the technological wonders that has created such ease of mm-hmm. putting those actors and those professionals into less dangerous, less onerous mm-hmm. scenarios to get the same shot.
Well, and also like it's way less expensive now with The Mandalorian. And also like they basically had to rebuild all of the physical assets for the Clone Wars season 7 because of the animation, like high definition, you know, increase. Because everything that is built within the world of the animation needs to be built by an animator. So even though they have the ship, so they have the Silver Angel, they actually have to like create the Silver Angel. And it makes you wonder like how much of the Silver Angel is actually mapped out. Well, they have the hangar and they have the cockpit, but like how much else is there? Like, cause like is the whole thing. In an interview, they talked about the Colossus for Resistance and they only have kind of like half of the Colossus actually mapped out because it's so much from a data perspective and they didn't really have the need for it. But like ships like the Ghost, they have entirely mapped out because they could be kind of anywhere in there. And so animators actually have to build these things in 3D so that you can actually have these, you know, almost doll-like figures walk through them. That's animation.
Yep.
It's really interesting.
And CGCG is doing all of that work for us.
Yep. CGCG.
Okay. So there's one thing I want to talk about this time, and that is the role of the pipeline supervisor.
Okay. I learned about this on Khan Academy's Pixar in a Box.
They're so important.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god. And so Lucasfilm's pipeline supervisor is Akanksha Sahu. I hope I'm saying that correctly. She has been with Lucasfilm for 14 years.
Holy hell.
Going back all the way to 2006. That's when she was hired.
Okay.
So that's basically the run of all of their animation stuff.
Yeah.
And she has been there. And the pipeline supervisor's role is to oversee the smooth running of either virtual effects or feature animation pipelines. Because there's so many moving parts, so many different people, and because there's almost zero physical assets, mm-hmm. you have to maintain everything in a pipeline environment. So they develop all of the tasks that are required, and then they collaborate with senior technology and the production leadership to enhance and maximize the investment in the development efforts. So when you're talking about, well, you know what? We need to design the entirety of the Ghost. It is likely a pipeline supervisor who's making the determination as to whether that is a full need, like the Ghost, mm. or only a partial need, like the Colossus,
yep.
in order to push everything through. They need to...
So it goes from like a concept to rough animation to... you know, lighting to all, like all the way to end. Yeah. To
end.
Yeah.
The very first thing, even before it's put onto a screen, picture a blank screen and the end product. And that person is managing the pipeline of everything's creation to go from that blank screen to the finished product. She's great. So important to Lucasfilm.
So important.
She's so important to Lucasfilm. There are is a couple of articles on her. They're quite a bit old, but I would really recommend going and reading them because they're like, who is this person that is so important to Lucasfilm that you probably don't know?
Is there a 365?
I don't know. I didn't see that. I hope there should be because she's amazing and like her skill set to create. She basically takes people's vision and assists putting all of the people who helped to make that a reality into being.
Mm-hmm.
And those sorts of people are to be valued and appreciated and cherished.
Very much so. That's great. I did want to do a death count, which is... And the death count for this episode is...
3 containers of spice.
Yes. I was hoping you would say that.
That is, unfortunately, all that ended this entire episode. And maybe Trace and Rafa's parents. I don't know for sure.
We don't know yet. What does split mean? Like a banana split? Like a divorce?
They're doing some amazing things with the art direction and the drawing and the physicality of the show. The messenger bag on the handlebar of Trash Bike. That's every single frame is picture worthy because that's where I would have hung a bag. It's Ahsoka's only things that she owns. That's her bike. Her bike's up on the table being fixed. Her bag is hanging on the handlebar of it. It was just really cool.
I like that she named it Trash Bike.
Trash Bike. Oh, yes. And so long, Trash Bike, because there's no way they're coming back to 1313.
Fair.
In the last 7 episodes that we've got, we don't even have 7 episodes because they'll move on to another arc. We only have 2 more episodes of this arc.
I did want to actually talk about that we do actually have the descriptions for the next 4 episodes.
Oh, available. I'm excited.
But I was only going to talk about the next one, unless you want me to kind of talk into spoiler territory.
Oh, I'm cool. You got spoilers?
I mean, it's just the descriptions.
I'll do the Rafa quote and you do Ahsoka's quote on this. And I'll say, you got any spoilers? And then Ahsoka's line back is, only useful ones.
Only useful ones. Well, these are just the descriptions that are listed out there.
That's also a Qui-Gon Jinn thing to say too.
Only useful ones. Yeah. Okay, so the next episode, I mean... it obviously just takes off like right where it leaves. So but we're going to be getting into spoiler territory after this because it will go. I'll list out what we have upcoming and then, we can talk about, that.
Let's conjecture. So before you read that, I want to conjecture what's going to happen next.
Okay.
They're seized. They're all thrown into jail.
Yeah.
And the Pikes are like, you're going to do this thing for us with your ship. And if you don't, we're going to kill so-and-so. That's my conjecture.
Okay.
And Ahsoka's then going to have to make a choice.
A deal or something, yeah.
Yeah, and go on. And then she's going to try to do the third option, which is usually the Jedi way. Find a different way.
Yeah.
Find the humanistic, the heuristic way to resolve the differences and difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what happens.
Okay. So spoilers, episode 707, Dangerous Debt. Taken prisoner by the Pikes, Ahsoka and the Martez sisters attempted to escape.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And then into the next episode. So I'm going to list out the next 3. So I don't have the 2 final episodes listed yet. So 708, Together Again, Ahsoka bargains for the sisters' freedom and makes a startling discovery.
Who is she bartering with?
Startling discovery. I think it's Maul. I think we're going
to
see Maul.
It's going to have to be.
We're going to see Maul.
She barters for the twins, the sisters escape, and then she's going to have to go and do something with the Crimson Dawn, and she's going to encounter Maul directly.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh my. She's going to get her lightsabers.
I think that's part of the concept art that Anakin actually gives them to her.
What?
Yeah.
Ugh, that's BS.
709, old friends not forgotten. Anakin and Obi-Wan must decide whether to help Ahsoka pursue Maul or rescue Palpatine.
Well, you rescue Palpatine.
Yeah, literally they have to because it's Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
That's the start of Revenge of the Sith.
Of course it is.
Yes, and then...
because Maul's only half a man and Palpatine is a whole man.
Yeah. episode 710, The Phantom Apprentice.
Really?
I see you, Dave Filoni. See you. Ahsoka and the Republic forces confront Maul on Mandalore.
That's exactly as you expected it to go. So,
well, we knew Maul was going to be in the season, but I think that we're going to discover, 2 episodes from now that Maul is involved. And
so this is going to go the whole distance.
Well, again, I think there's going to be like a little bit of a time gap because Ahsoka gets a different outfit.
Oh, okay. So do you think that the Martez sisters will be involved after these 2 episodes?
I don't think so.
That's too bad.
I think she's going to go off on her own.
Why create all of this relationship and tension and drama and whatnot with them and then just walk away from it?
Because it's the Clone Wars and they do that?
Well, then I hope they die.
They're not going to die. I hope.
Look, people don't leave you in Star Wars. They either die or fade away.
Just don't go to Skywalker Academy.
That's so true, eh? What they're teaching there. And the GPA is really high, though. I'll tell you that.
All right.
And the living quarters are really terrible, too.
Yeah, it's always falling on your head. Your
doors are always open. They're never locked.
The professor comes in and watches you sleep.
Yeah,
with the lightsaber in his
come
hand.
Come in at any given time of day or night.
Oh my god, no. Okay. We're done.
They burn to the ground so easily.
Oh god, stop. It's physically hurting me. Yeah. All right, so any other last thoughts before we wrap up this episode?
Please, Twitter friends out there, I would like to know how many people in Star Wars have said they are the best pilot around with the best ship you know. That's okay. It. I don't know.
I feel like it's Han Solo, but maybe not in those words. Lots of people are the best pilot around.
How many? I just want to know.
Poe's the best pilot around.
Exactly.
Rey's the best pilot around. Luke is the best pilot. But Luke is the best.
Wedge is the best pilot around.
Luke is the best pilot in the Outer Rim.
Yeah.
Anakin's the best pilot.
The list goes on and on and on.
Who is truly the best pilot?
I don't really care who the best pilot is. I just want to know how many there are.
I feel like this is a Star Wars Explained question because he knows everything.
Sounds good.
I will tweet at him.
And yeah, that's it for me. And goodbye, Trash Bike.
Oh, poor Trash Bike. We hardly knew ye. All right. And Kyle, thanks for joining me for Deal No Deal. Which makes me think of that TV show, Deal or No Deal.
All right, did you turn off the air brakes?
No. Okay, where can people find you if they're looking for you online?
As every episode, you can find me online at Tavern Tales DM.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host. Our music is orchestral music composed by Christy Carew for What the Force. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/whattheforce. We'd like to thank all our patrons, especially those who love and are obsessed with What the Force. Melody, Night Huntress, In Wild Space, Susan, Jessica, Brad, Anna Perez, Macau Mom, Neil, and James. Make sure you like and subscribe on your podcast app of choice or on YouTube. Leaving a 5-star review on iTunes helps other people find the show. You can connect with us on Twitter at What the Force Show, What the Force Podcast on Facebook, or on our website, whattheforce.ca. We also have a new Discord. Links are available in the liner notes. Feel free to reach out and start a conversation. Cheers.